Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
Well, I want to continue in the postscript of the Jim Jones People's Temple phenomenon that I've been examining recently. You know, I've been taking a closer look at Harvey Milk, who was metaphorically in bed with the Jim Jones cult. But I've been taking a closer look at him. I feel that in light of the perilous times that we're in and the homosexual agenda that's out there, that we should take a look at this information, because I took the occasion actually to pick up the movie Milk from the library to examine what I knew would be a propaganda film, a puff piece making Harvey Milk out to be something that he truly was not. But that's what I've been kind of looking into. Last week we looked into that. And I just wanted to take a closer look at Harvey Milk via this propaganda film, Milk, and then look at some of the inconvenient truths that were distorted or left out of the movie. You know, as I mentioned last week, Milk and Mayor Moscone in San Francisco, in the San Francisco local government there, the Liberal Democrats, were shot to death a little over 40 years ago. And we have looked at four articles so far concerning this phenomena and related to the Milk movie, etc. Two of these articles were from the gay community and two were from conservative sources. And I want to look at some more things that I think, if you didn't already know, you'll find interesting. But for right now, I'd appreciate your prayers. By the time you hear this, it probably won't matter, but I did something interesting today, the first time in my life, I think. I spilled water on my computer keyboard, and my last podcast worked great, but I have a little problem with the keys, a couple of the keys now. It's not a serious issue, and by the time you hear this, hopefully it'll all have dried out. But just be praying for my my klutziness, or I guess I have enough klutziness. I don't need to pray for more. But anyway, I had to share that because it's been a really rough day for me, folks, and I want to get through this, and hopefully this will be a blessing to you. I really feel like the enemy has come against me a lot recently, so if you could remember me in your prayers, I'd appreciate it. And hopefully I can give you a better report on my computer on down the road. I have another computer, by the way. God bless me with a new computer. I'm using the older one now, so that's a blessing in case it does finally go belly up. But I'm thinking it'll probably just dry out, and I'll live happily ever after. Anyway, like I say, we've looked at four articles last week concerning Harvey Milk, and I want to look at a few more and some other interesting material concerning this man who was a leader and a hero in the homosexual community. Now, the next article we want to look at is called Sexual Predator Honored with a U.S. Postage Stamp, and this is from 2013, October 28, 2013. This is from LifeSite News, and I don't have the author of the article here on the printout. But anyway, it says, Benjamin Franklin famously quipped, "In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes." The author says, Franklin evidently failed to envisage today's postmodern left, or the left wing, of course. For the conservative, there exists at least one other certainty, and it is this: the degree to which progressives attack you corresponds precisely to the degree with which you challenge any among their assorted, distorted, and sordid sacred cows. Boy, there's a mouthful. What would you call a 33-year-old man who both had and axiomatically acted upon a deviant sexual appetite for underage, drug-addicted, runaway boys? This is dark stuff, of course, but I think it's good to expose the myth of this man, Harvey Milk. in light of truth, you know, and in light of the deception that's taken place on culture, modern culture, the educational system, etc., especially in California, but even throughout our culture, throughout the country. This is, what would you call a man of whom, as regards sexual preference, his own friend and biographer confessed Harvey always had a penchant for young waifs with substance abuse problems. In a recent interview with OneNewsNow.com, I called this man demonstrably, categorically, an evil man based on his statutory rape of teenage boys. And, of course, the movie Milk that I've been talking about in the last podcast made him out to be nothing but a hero who cared about everybody that he came in contact, including young teenage boys. Well, or at least one in particular that the movie shows. But you can call... okay, the theme here, what would you call a man? What would you call a man who did this? What would you call this? And it says, but you can call him Harvey Milk. Harvey Milk's only claim to fame is that he was the first openly homosexual candidate to be elected to public office, San Francisco City Commissioner. His chief cause was to do away with the Judeo-Christian sexual ethic. In 1978, Milk was murdered over a non-related political dispute by fellow Democrat Dan White. That's important. It was a fellow Democrat, and it was a non-related, it wasn't related to homosexuality, it was related, it was a non-related political dispute. And then it says, and a progressive martyr was born. You know, I mentioned last week that, I would share what a pederast was. That was actually a term that I wasn't that familiar with. But anyway, Merriam-Webster in the dictionary defines a pederast as one who practices anal intercourse, especially with a boy. I'm sorry, that's pretty graphic. But this is from a Christian site, and we're dealing with exposing deception and evil. It defines statutory rape as the crime of having sex with someone who is younger than an age that is specified by law. Harvey Milk was both a pederast and, by extension, a statutory rapist. After I publicly addressed this objective reality in the above-mentioned interview, the liberal blogosphere reacted in, shall we say, an informatively defensive manner. And then he cites examples, and I won't take the time for that here. Here's what's especially telling about their reaction. Not one of the dozen or more publications that reported on my comments even challenged their veracity or truth. Not one attempted to refute or deny that Harvey Milk was in fact a pederast and a sexual predator. That's because they can't. One of Milk's victims was a 16-year-old runaway from Maryland named Jack Galen McKinley. As previously mentioned, Milk had a soft spot in his heart for teenage runaways. You know, Daniel Flynn spoke about this too in Cult City to some degree in some of the interviews concerning Harvey Milk. Motivated by an apparent quid pro quo of prurience, Milk plucked McKinley from the street. Randy Schultz, who's one of the most beloved journalists in the LGBT community, was also Harvey Milk's biographer. In his glowing book, The Mayor of Castro Street, he wrote of Milk's relationship with the McKinley boy. 16-year-old McKinley was looking for some kind of father figure. At 33, Milk was launching a new life, though he could hardly have imagined the unlikely direction toward which his new lover would pull him. In a sane world, of course, the only direction his new lover should have pulled him was toward San Quentin, which, of course, is a prison. But alas, today's America, a burgeoning relativistic land of make-believe, is anything but sane. Randy Thomason, child advocate and former and founder of SaveCalifornia.com, is one of the nation's foremost experts on Harvey Milk. Of the Schultz biography, Thomason notes, explaining Milk's many flings and affairs with teenagers and young men, Randy Schultz writes how Milk told one lover why it was okay for him to also have multiple relationships simultaneously. As homosexuals, we can't depend on the heterosexual model. We grow up with the heterosexual model, but we don't have to follow it. We should be developing our own lifestyle. There's no reason why you can't love more than one person at a time. Whereas McKinley, a disturbed runaway boy, desperately sought a father figure to provide empathy, compassion, wisdom, and direction, he instead found Harvey Milk, a promiscuous sexual predator who found in McKinley an opportunity to satisfy a perverse lust for underage flesh. Years later, McKinley committed suicide. Another teen who crossed paths with Harvey Milk was Christian convert and former homosexual Gerald Doles. In a 2008 radio interview with Concerned Women for America, Doles shared of how, as a physically disabled teen, the very nice Harvey Milk had encouraged him in 1977 to run away from his Minnesota home and come to San Francisco. According to Doles, Milk told him, "Don't tell your parents," and later sent him a letter with instructions. Thankfully, the letter was intercepted by Doles' parents, who then filed a complaint with the Minnesota Attorney General's office. The incident was evidently swept under the rug. Not the only incident, by the way, that has been swept under the rug concerning Harvey Milk. And we'll read more about Gerald Doles later, either in this podcast or maybe in the next one. So what does a man like Harvey Milk get for his apparent crimes? While most sexual predators get time in prison and a dishonorable mention on the registry of sex offenders, Harvey Milk got his own California state holiday, which is Harvey Milk Day, and more recently, his own commemorative postage stamp awarded by the Obama administration's USPS, or the post office. And again, this was in 2013. God bless America? Question mark. He says, "Some have said that my reality-based assessment of Harvey Milk is uncivil. Our historical revisionist friends on the left tend to get a bit snooty when you publicly deconstruct one of their meticulously fabricated mythical martyrs." All right, so he's got his own day in California, the Harvey Milk Day, his stamp. Now, the next article addresses something else that is left in his legacy. And this is from 2016, written by Selwyn Duke. This is from the New American website. Navy ship to be named after pederast rapist Harvey Milk. What do you get when you statutorily rape teenage boys? A prison sentence? Scorn and ostracism? If you're homosexual rights activist Harvey Milk, the answer is a U.S. Navy ship named in your honor. The move is the handiwork of Obama appointee Ray Mabus, Secretary of the Navy, who signed a July 14th notification indicating that he intended to name a planned military sealift command fleet, oiler, USNS Harvey Milk, reports USNI News. The site also tells us over the last several years, there have been pushes from California politicians to have a ship named for Milk since the 2011 repeal of the Department of Defense Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Naming a ship after Milk will further send a green light to all the brave men and women who serve our nation that honesty, acceptance, and authenticity are held up among the highest ideals of our military, said Milk's nephew, Stuart Milk, in a statement to San Diego LGBT Weekly in 2012. Yet this assertion is ironic given that there's little honest and authentic about the myth built around Milk. And that myth has been long in the making. Milk's claim to fame is being the first openly homosexual man elected to public office in a major U.S. city, San Francisco City County Board in 1977, and being murdered by a disgruntled fellow Democrat. That martyrdom led to the creation of Harvey Milk Day, which is governmentally recognized as a day of significance in California public schools. He has also been given a posthumous Presidential Medal of Freedom by Barack Obama and has been honored with a U.S. postage stamp, which we just mentioned, and now his name will defile a Navy vessel. This is despite Milk's claim to infamy being far greater, albeit less well known. The family, and this is a repeat of something I read earlier, the Family Research Council's Peter Sprigg, either earlier in this podcast or last podcast, I don't remember, noted that Milk is famous only for winning one election, being murdered, and having sex with men. And even this understates the matter, for as with fellow leftist icon Gore Vidal, Milk was a pederast. And like so many sexual abusers, Milk preyed on the vulnerable, with even friend and biographer Randy Schultz writing that Harvey always had a penchant for young waifs with substance abuse problems. Once again, that's kind of a rerun. I've already mentioned that before. But unlike Vidal, Milk committed statutory rape. One of his victims was a 16-year-old runaway from Maryland named Jack Galen McKinney. We went over that before. And columnist Matt Barber called Milk demonstrably, categorically an evil man, wrote of the pederast's relationship with McKinley and other adolescent males. As I mentioned, years later, McKinley committed suicide. Whether or not Milk had some of McKinley's blood on his hands, it wouldn't be the only blood. Just consider his relationship with Jim Jones. And, of course, I've already been over this, how he, endorsed to Jimmy Carter. He wrote Jimmy Carter 7 months before the Jonestown carnage concerning Jones's abduction of a six-year-old boy. Finally, in this article, little if any of the above about concerning Jim Jones has been presented in the various books and movies created about Milk, works including the 2008 film starring Sean Penn, which, of course, we've been talking about Milk, and a children's picture book entitled The Harvey Milk Story. Yet elevating sexual predators is nothing new for the left. Hollywood also made a flattering movie about sex researcher Alfred Kinsey, a pedophile who used pseudoscience as a cover for his child abuse. And the first openly homosexual member of Congress, Jerry Studs, had a 1983 sexual affair with a teenage male page, but nonetheless was reelected until his retirement in 1997. Former Louisiana Governor Edwin Edwards, Democrat, once quipped before his 1983 gubernatorial contest that the only way I can lose this election is if I'm caught in bed with either a dead girl or a live boy. It appears that at least one of those eventualities is no longer a disqualifier for public office or for being honored by those already in it. And when we're naming Navy vessels after pederastic rapists, we have to wonder for how much longer the good ship America will stay afloat. So, very powerful, very disturbing information, I realize, but I think necessary to demythologize Harvey Milk in light of the left's veneration of him. Now, speaking of mythology, here's an article by Daniel Flynn, of course, who I addressed in earlier podcasts, but this I felt was necessary once again concerning his so-called assassination by those who claimed on the left, which was by a homophobe and a hater and a conservative, and all the lies that they said about this guy. That's all mythology, and Flynn's done the research. But, you know, this is the type of thing we can expect in these last days. 2 Timothy chapter 4 tells Timothy to preach the word in these last days. The time will come, and this is 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 3 and 4, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables, or myths, as other translations put it. So, this article looks at mythology as history, and this is 2018, November 26th. So this is a recent article, and that's another reason why I wanted to share it. This article, I believe, has come out since I shared the other information from Daniel Flynn, who wrote the book Cult City. It says the mythology is history. The troubled man who murdered Harvey Milk and George Moscone killed them over a petty grievance, not anti-gay bigotry. 40 years ago, November 27th, 1978, of course it's 41 now, Dan White assassinated San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk. In successfully unleashing the Twinkie defense, the contention that an overindulgence of sweets chemically coerced a good man into committing a bad act, White's attorney distorted the jury's understanding of why the former San Francisco supervisor snuck into City Hall through a window to kill two former colleagues. In the decades since that jury inexplicably convicted White of mere manslaughter. Milk's advocates similarly distort public understanding of why Dan White committed homicide. Harvey Milk died because he was a gay man, Milk's friend and fellow Bay Area reporter-writer Wayne Friday claimed in the immediate aftermath of the murders. George Moscone died because he was a friend of gay people. They can never convince me otherwise, and I will go to bed every night praying that their killer pays the full price. When a court allowed White to pay less than that full price, angry activists chanted at City Hall, Dan White, hitman for the new right. Almost a decade ago, after Representative Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie," to President Barack Obama during a joint session of Congress, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi cited Milk's assassination as a warning against Republicans inciting unhinged individuals through their rhetoric. I have concerns about some of the language that is being used because I saw this myself in the late 70s in San Francisco, a choked-up Pelosi explained. This kind of rhetoric was very frightening, and it created a climate in which violence took place. All this smacks of non sequitur, in the same way that Dan White claiming that sweets made him kill did. White, a San Francisco Democrat like Pelosi and his two murder victims, resembled neither a new right figure nor a raging homophobe. Politically, he resembled Dianne Feinstein, who served as White's mentor on the Board of Supervisors. On his first day in office, White engineered a coup of sorts that allowed the woman he admired to leapfrog over the board's top Election Day vote-getter and into the board presidency. White successfully lobbied Feinstein, who had an antagonistic relationship with Milk, to appoint Milk to a committee chairmanship that he coveted. All these years later, Feinstein, not Bill Danmeyer or Bob Dornan, who I believe were both conservative Republicans, possesses Dan White's diary. The association, did you hear that? All these years later, Feinstein, not these two Republican conservatives, possesses Dan White's diary. The association between the two figures upends the narrative portraying White as a right-winger out to settle ideological scores. White delivered the keynote address, Dan White, he delivered the keynote address at the California Coalition for Handgun Controls 1977 annual meeting. Like Feinstein, he supported gun control. He sometimes carried a firearm himself. As a supervisor, he voted for an aggressive affirmative action policy that evaluated those in city management by how many minorities advanced under their leadership. White's stands on gay rights appear consistently inconsistent as well. The first person, I'm jumping ahead in the article here, the first person White hired in politics was a gay man who served as his campaign manager and later his chief of staff and business partner. That was never an issue, Ray Sloan told me in an interview. That was an interview, with Daniel Flynn. In coordinating his campaign, I don't think anyone knew or cared if I was gay. I neither hid it, but I wasn't out participating in any way that would say that. I sort of lived my own life. As time went on, it was clear that he knew. It just didn't make any difference to him. It didn't make any difference to Dan White that his campaign manager was gay. Milk often joined White for coffee or lunch, unlike other colleagues on the board. Milk attended the christening of White's son. When Milk introduced the sole legislation authored by him to become law, a sensible ordinance requiring dog owners to clean up after their pets, White seconded it. So, White supported Milk's ordinance. But after Milk reversed his support for White's efforts to keep a home for troubled youth from opening in his district, the troubled White reversed his support for a gay rights measure important to Milk. Milk perhaps never saw White as an ally, but White clearly saw Milk as such, which led to feelings of betrayal. So who knows how White would have voted. He probably would have voted for the gay rights measure had he not felt betrayed by Milk not voting for his measure. So it was not related to the homosexual issue at all, as the fine research of Daniel Flynn shows. During White's brief time in politics, he sided with Milk on the most important issue involving gay rights. He endorsed no on Proposition 6, a ballot measure sponsored by California State Senator John Briggs, seeking to empower local school boards to fire openly gay teachers. White attended the largest gay rights fundraiser in the history of U.S. politics at the time to mobilize support against Briggs, donating $100 to defeat the anti-gay measure. About a week after Proposition 6 went down to defeat, White abruptly offered his resignation from the Board of Supervisors. Then the public employees who had worked hard to elect him, let him know, at times angrily, that they objected to his sudden decision. Just as suddenly, the mercurial politician asked for his job back. Moscone initially welcomed White back on the board, but the mayor changed his mind after Milk lobbied him to seat someone else and encouraged political players in White's district to jettison his attempt to regain his seat. That's not how it's portrayed in the movie, which I watched, of course, that Milk and his allies and his friends were saying, oh, you know, this guy's this bad anti-homosexual guy, and, you know, and that's the reason why. In other words, it's just Hollywood. Hollywood lies, more Hollywood lies. White felt betrayed. More important, he felt as though he had betrayed those loyal to him. A petty man nursing a petty grievance over a petty office murdered Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey White. I know why Dan White killed Milk, board colleague Quentin Cope explained in an interview for Cult City. That was the book Dan Flynn wrote. Because Milk was lobbying Moscone not to weaken and not reappoint White to the board. That got around. Dianne Feinstein, a fellow Democrat who nevertheless disagreed with Cope on much, agrees with him here. This had nothing to do with anybody's sexual orientation, she reflected 10 years ago. It had to do with getting back his position. You know, somebody should have told the writers of the movie Milk. Towering figures who die for trifling reasons inspire alternative explanations for their deaths, and those explanations rarely mesh with the facts. Such is the case with the murders of Harvey Milk and George Moscone. So much for the mythology, some of the mythology concerning Harvey Milk and his killer, and his movie, the puff piece, the propaganda piece that was put out by Hollywood. Now, I see I have a little time left. I may need to, yes, I think I'm going to save the rest for another podcast. And thank you for bearing with me through a lot of this dirt, if you will. Thank God you're saved. And if you're not, I hope you'll get that way. But, we need to remember that the people that are in bondage to homosexuality need prayer. They need salvation. But they don't need to be encouraged to push their agenda upon our children and others. One day, they'll know the truth. We pray it would be before it's too late for them. Well, God bless you all, and I hope you'll join me next week. Good night.